Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, Robert Reich goes all Michael Moore on us.
The middle class is struggling.
We are losing equal opportunity in America.
We will talk to the former Labor Secretary about his new documentary, soon to open in theaters, called Inequality for All, which I guess sets us up perfectly for our first guest this morning, New York City public advocate Bill de Blasio, who, of course, has been running for mayor with fighting inequality as a central theme. He is back with us for the first time since winning the primary. So welcome back to WNYC, and congratulations on getting this far.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's great to be back.
Do you know Robert Reich, by the way, from your days in the Clinton administration?
Maybe Just a little. I think he's fantastic.
Maybe he could be your commissioner for trickle-up economics.
I like it. I'll take that under advisement, Brian.
I also want to know if there's a two-shot with the two of you anywhere, which would be a wonder to behold.
Yes, that's a true statement. But what we differ in height, we make up for an ideological similarity.
How much can a mayor fight inequality? People know your universal full-day pre-K proposal, but that helps those kids in the job market 20 years from now. Reich is going to come on later and talk about all these things at the national level. How much can a mayor do?
I think a mayor of New York City can do a lot because we have the strongest municipal government, one of the strongest local governments, city or state, anywhere in the country. And we have tools, living wage legislation, paid sick days, changing our subsidies away from big companies and helping small business, helping people get to CUNY education that will get them better jobs, what we can do in terms of encouraging local hiring in development. There's so many pieces we have, tools at our disposal that could really have an impact. And then beyond the narrow question of income inequality, addressing inequality more broadly, what we can do to create affordable housing that would address the number one expense most families face. So I think a mayor of New York City is in a profoundly empowered position to act on this issue, nowhere near as much as the federal government could by definition. But let's face it, the federal government isn't addressing this issue because of the Republican Congress. So it is incumbent upon state and local leaders to do it.
What would you want from Washington, first and foremost, to fight inequality?
Oh, I think President Obama has laid out over several states of the union and other speeches a very clear path for investing in the future of this country, investing in education, infrastructure, mass transit, affordable housing, the things the federal government used to do that spurred the economy writ large, that created affordability, that helped people have opportunity. I think it's clear if the federal government were in the business of, one, building our economy strategically, and two, fostering equality, there's a vast number of tools at their disposal. But I think that's at least one or two elections away in terms of congressional elections, and it's incumbent, again, upon local leaders to do everything we can. And, Brian, I'd say one more point. I also say back to people, we have to do all we can do. Even if it's not everything we would like to do, we have to do all we can do. I think Mayor Bloomberg didn't share that view. I didn't think he thought of his mission as being addressing inequality with every tool available to him, even though he didn't have all the tools, even though I wouldn't have all the tools I'd love to have. We still have to use those that we do have.
Democratic mayoral candidate Bill de Blasio with us here on WNYC. Republican candidate Joe Loda has campaigned saying he's for universal pre-K too, but with at least one difference. He thinks he can find enough efficiencies in the city budget to pay for it without a tax hike on the wealthy. Do you think you couldn't find those efficiencies?
I think there's two answers. I think finding those efficiencies quickly is hard to do to the tune of $530 million a year. That's what I'm talking about as part of my tax plan. Again, my plan is tax those who make $500,000 or more for two things, full-day pre-K for every child in the city, after-school guaranteed for every middle school child. To get that $530 million a year right away, I think the most efficient way to do it is with a tax on the wealthy. As we find savings, I think we're going to need those savings. For one thing, we have so many other things we have to do to make our schools better. But second, we're going to have the burden of these open labor contracts. We're going to need to find cost savings throughout many agencies to make sure that we can stay fiscally strong.
Are you afraid of scaring away the rich people who would pay that pre-K income tax? Mayor Bloomberg talks about wanting all the Russian billionaires to move here. You heard that clip, precisely because they would pay so much in taxes that fund city services.
I don't think there's evidence that small local tax increases, particularly one that's temporary such as that I have proposed, have any serious impact on people's choices about where to live. I think that this is a city that those who are wealthy want to come to for a lot of reasons. I don't think anything's going to change because of, in terms of that worldview, I don't think anything's changing because of what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is addressing inequality for the long term, which, by the way, I have argued is in the interest of those who are doing well also. If we don't have a better school system, if we don't work at a more fair city, at improving our social fabric, at making sure that we have a workforce that's actually viable for the modern economy, I don't think that's healthy for anyone in this city if we don't address those problems.
What do you say to listeners who think Mayor Bloomberg has done, in general, a very good job? Are you not their candidate?
Well, I would say this. There are areas where he has, and I've been very open about it. I think he did a very good job on public health. He did a very good job on environment. I think he was right to achieve mayoral control of education. I don't think he then applied it the right way. I think he didn't listen to parents, and he was negative towards teachers. And I think there's better ways to use mayoral control of education. But clearly, Mayor Bloomberg did some things right. What I would say is he did not address the central issue we're now facing, which is inequality, which is the reality that by statistics, by, you know, city government statistics, we know that almost half the city is now living at or near the poverty level, and city government policies are not addressing the extent of that problem. We know that lots of people are struggling. Small business owners in the outer boroughs being a classic example, struggling to begin with and then struggling more because of city policies that penalize them unfairly. I think at a certain point, particularly in the third term, Mayor Bloomberg lost touch with the people he was serving and stopped trying to provide solutions to the growing economic challenges that everyday New Yorkers face. So even if someone thinks he did well on some issues or did well particularly in his first term, I would argue that by the end he was taking us in the wrong direction, and we need a much more progressive approach for the next phase in New York City's history.
You mentioned his hostility to teachers. Have you seen this lawsuit yet that the mayor is apparently filing against the UFT, saying that they're not providing the arbitrators that they promised to try to get rid of the rubber rooms for, you know, teachers who aren't deemed fit to be in the classroom? Do you have a position on that yet?
I have not seen that lawsuit, so I can't comment specifically, but obviously I look forward to having a very different relationship with the union and one that's productive. You know, it's natural for mayors and municipal unions to have disagreements, but I think what happened in the last few years of the Bloomberg years was a very contentious, unproductive set of relationships that didn't foster reform, didn't achieve cost savings. I'd like to bring some normalcy, some rationality to the relationship between the mayoralty and municipal labor.
Democratic mayoral candidate Bill de Blasio with us. Let me ask you another city finances question. Bloomberg seems to have kicked the can down the road on securing the city's long-term financial health. The budget watchdogs say whoever the new mayor is will inherit a pretty bleak fiscal situation, not just labor contracts that I know you won't negotiate in public, but the city has massive obligations as far as the eye can see on pension and health care promises for employees and retirees. And, of course, every penny we spend on those is a penny we can't spend on pre-K or anything else. And I'm told that the ability to pay for that by refinancing debt has about run out. So how do you define the city's fiscal problem, and what do you think are the solutions?
I think we have profound challenges. I think we also need to bear in mind that the city of New York has been through much greater fiscal difficulties than those we face today and has come through, often because of cooperation with all the sectors that make up the city, including municipal labor. So I look forward to fostering that kind of cooperation and sense of shared responsibility. I would argue that there's a lot we can do to decrease employee health care costs. It's in my platform. I think we could utilize models that exist right now in New York City. The Hotel Trades Council has an extraordinary set of clinics, for example, that provide health care of many types under one roof, very efficient, very cost-effective, heavy emphasis on primary and preventive care. I want to move our municipal workers to that kind of system. It's something we'd have to negotiate with labor, but I think we can get buy-in, and that will save us billions in the coming years if we achieve that. I think there's a lot of cost savings to be achieved in our city government. I think, bluntly, a lot of the contracting out and the privatization efforts of the Bloomberg years were cost inefficient in the final analysis, Citi Time being the most egregious example. But I would argue that we have a certain amount of money. This is the bottom line. I've served on the staff of the mayor's office. I lived this for 4 years personally. There's going to be a certain amount of money at the end of the day. We may do better or worse on revenues. We may find more or less savings. Labor may be willing to come up with more or less productivity. At the end of the day, there's a final dollar figure, and you don't have any more to spend than that, and that will govern what we do with these contracts.
Last time you were on, you mentioned that you worked in the Clinton administration for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. What did you do there? I think a lot of the listeners don't know that part of your background. And what did you learn that might inform your housing policy as mayor?
Well, my job was as regional director for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. I was a appointee of President Clinton. I was serving directly under Secretary Andrew Cuomo. And I covered all of New York State and New Jersey, and the central mission was to make sure that all the federal dollars going into those two states and going into cities, counties, et cetera, were achieving what they were designated for, were achieving job creation and affordable housing creation. What I would say is one of the most profound lessons for me is how easily government gums up a good idea and can everything can be well arranged in theory, but on the ground in practice, particularly in the relationship between different levels of government, a lot doesn't happen. And I'm very adamant about coming up with the right kind of personnel and the right kind of approaches that cut through that gridlock. Gridlock seems to be the default position of many levels of government.
Unfortunately.
Right. And so sometimes it's not even that you don't have the money. Sometimes you have the money and the problem is getting the different entities on the same page. So that's something I learned, sadly, a lot about how to deal with.
So that New York Times article on your support for the Sandinistas in the 1980s and calling yourself a democratic socialist at the time, what do you want to say to New Yorkers who read that article and didn't know about that part of your life?
Well, I'm very proud to have been deeply involved in a movement that rightfully thought U.S. policy towards Central America was wrong-headed and counterproductive and not in line with our values. The United States government in the 1980s under Reagan and the first Bush presidency, in many cases supporting violent dictators and undemocratic governments. And when there were choices by people in certain countries to make changes, you know, the United States often tried to intervene against the decisions of the people of those countries. And I think that's a sad, long history of U.S. involvement in Latin America that's finally beginning to change. So I'm proud to have been involved in an effort that was challenging that. I'm proud to have helped get humanitarian aid to nonprofits in Nicaragua that were helping people in need. And look, I'm a progressive. I've always been a progressive. I think that article didn't fully represent what I feel, except for one passage that very accurately noted that one part of me is a New Deal Democrat, just an updated version of it. One part of me is probably similar to a European Social Democrat, and I'm also very deeply influenced by liberation theology, which I learned a lot about in the years I worked on Central America. So I think people should understand me as a consistent progressive with a very strong activist worldview and someone who wants to make substantial change in the city.
Did you bristle at the journalism at all? Like, why do we need the New York Post if the Times is going to publish a headline saying you were a leftist?
I thought the story clearly could have been more balanced, and I thought the particular use of terminologies, you know, I found it surprising. Let's just put it that way. When I finally saw the notes in question, yes, I did write that phrase on a piece of paper in 1990. But, you know, I always describe my philosophy as being made up of a blend of influences and ideas. And, you know, I was surprising in the year 2013 to see in that newspaper that particular approach.
Before you go, there is one Democratic primary still going on, as you know, and it's the runoff to succeed you as public advocate. Are you going to remain neutral to the end between Dan Squadron and Letitia James?
Yeah, they're both friends. They're both people I think are very effective public servants and very progressive, and I think both would do a fine job as public advocates.
Then just give our listeners, if you would, your sense as you leave the position of what voters should look for in a public advocate, and then they'll decide who best fits those criteria if they're going to vote next Tuesday.
I think the public advocate has to be a strong check and balance on the mayor, by definition. has to be a watchdog on the mayoralty and the city government, and from my point of view, should be activist in terms of pushing government to serve people more effectively and willing to be contentious when the government isn't doing that.
And one more thing on that. The runoff is costing like $13 million, more than the entire budget for the Office of Public Advocate for the next 4 years. Do you support instant runoff voting in future public advocate and maybe even mayoral primaries so people can list their second choice right on primary day?
On the one hand, look, I think it should be looked at seriously, and I certainly love the notion of saving the money. What I think is problematic about it is that you have a very different discussion when it comes down to two candidates. And there's something about IRV that doesn't fully represent the choices that people need to make in real time. So I think it should be looked at. Maybe there's yet another approach that would be even better. But you're exactly right if you say, would it be nice to find a way to save the money? Yes, it would.
30 seconds for anything you want to say to the voters about anything.
I think we need a fundamental change in this city. I think we need to go in a progressive direction to address inequality. I think the way to think about this is inequality is gripping this city on many, many levels. And it's not healthy for the future of a great city to be riven with inequality. In fact, even getting worse, as we saw from the report this last week. And I think with progressive leadership at City Hall, we can actually start to turn it around.
Bill de Blasio, thank you so much. We'll keep talking.
Thanks, Brian. Take care now.